Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of some articles that I have written and tell you how to access them. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will discover there some articles that I produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, one of the most recent articles was my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the Scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice after all. That has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others, but I mentioned those three. I'm not a regular blogger, but when sometimes things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. We continue our exposition of Peter's first epistle. We've come to chapter 2, verses 18 through 25. Starting at verse 11, Peter had begun to address us and admonish us in terms of our Monday morning relationships as aliens and strangers in this world, how to conduct ourselves so that we will be light in the world and not amplify the darkness. I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lust. This is the interior war that you and I have. These fleshly desires, they wage war against the soul. They mess us up on the inside, and they can cut the vitals of our very faith. Then we have the obligation to maintain good order among the Gentiles. Let's keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, because they will take good and turn it into evil, and they will take evil and turn it into good, you operate in such a way that in the thing in which they slander you, they may, on account of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day that God visits them. That may be here and now, and it may be when Christ comes. But in any event, one day, they will acknowledge that we were right and they were wrong to the glory of God. Now he speaks to our relationship to those who are in authority, just as Paul did back in Romans chapter 13. He calls upon us not to be vigilantes or subversives or saboteurs when we get all exercised about governments and governors and whoever. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether as to a king as one in authority or to governors sent by the king for the punishment of evildoers and to the praise of those who do right. Governments do not always operate at that level. They should, and they will give account to God as his unconscious ministers for not doing so. But nevertheless, that is their ideal function. That's their God-given function. So this is the will of God for us as believers, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men who would represent us as subversives and as anti-authority. We are not those who go around with bumper stickers saying, question authority. We are those who, he says, are to act as free men. We do not belong to this world. We do not belong to human government. We belong to God. but don't use your freedom as a covering for evil. Just because in a certain way you have diplomatic immunity, don't use that as an excuse to do things that will bring dishonor upon the Lord. Use it as bondslaves of God. Use it in the way that God has ordained. And here are principles that should guide us. To summarize, honor all men. Love the brotherhood, the Christian brotherhood. Fear God, honor the king. Now, in verse 18, he talks about slaves. In the Roman world, the majority of people were slaves, not citizens. And that brings up a situation where we are taught there is no place for in-your-face behavior. The apostle again raises the sobering possibility of faith-imposed suffering in the course of Christian living. In this passage, Peter speaks to that potential in the context of mistreatment by those in power, mistreatment by people who have the upper hand and may choose, out of spite or whim, to subject us believers to abuse. And as I say, most believers in the Roman world, not all, but most believers, they were not masters, they were slaves. They may be highly educated, they may be tutors to the high and mighty. Most weren't, but they could have been. Nevertheless, their political condition was as slaves. Well, in this situation, any person with a little mustard on his macho is sorely tempted, certainly I'm one, to play John Wayne or to storm the opposition with all guns ablaze and swagger away like Rambo, warning any who may follow suit, "Don't ever tread on me." Years ago, before my father passed away, my mother had deep insight into me. I never felt my father dead, but Mom had passed on, and Dad and I were sitting in the living room one time. I was telling him, don't know how the discussion got started, I said, "You know, Dad, since I was raised in a Christian home, people have known me all my life as a Christian person, but they have no idea, as I've come to recognize, what kind of individual I would be if it hadn't been for Christ in my life." And Dad, without blinking, said, "Oh, I do." I said, somewhat dubious, "What kind of person?" And he was not kidding. He said, "A terrorist." He read me pretty well. I myself am as tempted to go into that mode under those conditions as anybody. My natural instinct is in your face, not to turn the other cheek. But what we learn in this passage, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18 and following, is that there's no place for in your face. In the Christian life, there's no room for that. God has a vested interest, we're about to see, in our response to mistreatment, and especially so in cases of abuse of power and authority. God's will is that we imitate Christ in his sufferings, not Clint Eastwood and his aggravations. To refuse to do so is to reject one of the purposes for which we are called. In verse 13, the apostle directs Christians to subject themselves to every human institution. And by that designation, we see that the institutions he had in mind were the state and the household, both institutions established by God in his common grace for the well-being of the race. Now, in this passage, the whole interest is in, quote, right conduct in an existing and well-established family relationship. I'm quoting Selwyn. In addressing slaves, the Apostle Peter is not putting his stamp of approval upon the institution of slavery as such. Just get that out of your mind. He is providing direction about right conduct in an existing, well-established family arrangement. And in that day, slaves were live-in domestics who, as such, became members of the household and were thereby extension, ex officio members of the domestic scene. The apostle has a special interest here in maintaining the proper order in the domestic sphere. For the welfare of society, both the state and the home must be well ordered and respectful of the authorities that God has ordained in each sphere. Christians, first of all, should respond to God's will in this matter, even when it hurts. Servants, verse 18, be submissive to your masters with all respect. And then he adds, this is important, not only to those who are good and gentle, there were those kind, but also to those who are unreasonable, and there were certainly those kind, probably more of those kinds by far than the other. For this finds favor, what? If for the sake of conscience toward God, a man, a human being, bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if, when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, him who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. And while suffering, he uttered no threats. But he kept entrusting himself to him, the Father, who judges righteously. And he himself, Christ that is, bore our sins in his body on the cross, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. For by his wounds you were healed. For you were continually straying like sheep, but now you have returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls. End of chapter. So Peter's goal, according to Michaels, is that whatever the Christians may suffer at the hands of government or populace will be undeserved suffering. And the goal is it will not be a punishment for actual social wrong. And in doing so, whatever we suffer would be an imitation of Christ our head, in serving God's redemptive purpose in the world, and as his body, we cooperate in his redemptive purpose in the world. So in verse 18, we see an extension of Christian submission to the domestic sphere. Peter speaks first to those believers with the most remote connection with the family unit. Hence, they are those most likely to resent both the unwilling indignity of their position and to resent their harsh treatment at the hands of unkind and ill-tempered masters, who dealt with them more as chattel than as fellow human beings created in the image and likeness of God. Servants, be submissive to your masters. Servants refers to slaves working around the house in the family setting, and that was so common in the Roman world. As I say, most of the citizenry of the Roman Empire were conquered peoples, and conquered peoples were automatically, they were slaves. They were bought and sold just like any other property. They were not free men, free women. Selwyn says he's thinking of slaves not as members of a social class, but as members of something more fundamental, the social unit of the home. We should note that the principle here in its application can extend with some limitation, folks, to anyone under authority. For example, this principle, servants be submissive to your masters, is extendable in spirit to employer-employee relationships, but, get this, only to the extent and within the sphere that an employee is lawfully engaged to the authority of an employer. Now, that's a very important qualification. Unlike slaves, employees are not owned by their employers in the way that slaves were in the Greco-Roman world or other parts of the world or in the United States and the colonies before the Civil War. The services, the times, the skills, the energies of employees are purchased to varying degrees by various employers. To the extent that an employee has contracted or offered these resources to an employer, then to that extent and for that time, that employee is under his employer's authority, and in that context should, as a believer, always subject himself to it without complaint or coercion. It has application that far. That is God's will. That is really all a Christian has to know. Now, that is our Christian duty when we're under the authority of another for whatever length of time we are under that authority. Here's the spirit of this Christian duty. Do it with all respect. Be submissive to your masters with all respect. We Christians are not called upon to cower or to cringe before human beings in authority. We Christians are not called upon to regard them or to treat them as superior human beings. What we are called upon to do, if we are an employee under authority, for as long as we are lawfully under that authority, they hire us, let's say, for 8 hours a day. After that, my time is my own. But to the extent that this principle applies, we are to show respect to those who are in authority over us. In doing this, we're called upon to show respect or reverence to the ultimate authority, namely God, by whose will and orders we have been subjected to human authorities. We show reverence to God when we submit ourselves to those whom God has placed over us in the human institutions that He has ordained and established. And of course, that applies not only to slaves who served as domestics in homes, but that applies also to children. We show contempt for God's will and God's appointments when we balk, when we resist, when we rebel, when people aren't asking us to give unto Caesar that which belongs to God. In the final analysis, God is the one we show contempt for, and He's the one we turn our backs on when we don't do that. I tell you something, folks. There are few biblical prescriptions that are more contrary to the temper of our modern times, or more radical principles to live by in this era of in-your-face relationships at all levels of life. In a day when bumper stickers urge us to question authority, in a day of the politics of defiance and unruliness rules the roost, this principle, servants be submissive to your masters, this principle flies in the face of the status quo in a popular mood. I've said before that the only thing worse and more socially destructive than bad authority is anarchy where there is no authority. All you have to do is go back to the conditions after the French Revolution and see that. Neither the state nor the home can thrive, or perhaps even survive, under a regime of anarchy where might is right, and that changes by the minute. It's far easier for a society to adjust to one savage tyrant than to adjust to a million or millions. And it's far better that we live under conditions where we have to contend with a madman and his henchmen at the top than live under millions of uncontrolled rabid beasts all around us. We need justice from the state, and we need justice in the home. The next best thing, though no substitute for it, is order and authority. We need that. For in this sinful world, there is no end to injustice and sorrows in a state or home where authority is broken down. The need for law and order is an urgency lost only on fools. And in our society, fools are in no short supply these days. For Christians to pitch their tents with what the Greeks used to call innovators, that's people always bent on revolution, well, that spirit would surely bring reproach on the name of Christ in the eyes of all wise people who would justly accuse believers of behaviors inimical to the welfare of the state and the home. So, that principle is important. Said in verse 13, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution. Here, he speaks to servants who is really speaking to the home because they were domestics. Servants, Be submissive to your masters with all respect, and not only those who are good and gentle, but also those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor if, for the sake of conscience toward God, a man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. Of course, he means a conscience informed of God, a conscience that's being renewed by God through the Spirit working through the Word. The spirit of Christian submission is not impelled by pragmatism. By that I mean, well, okay, I'll go along with it. I don't want to get in trouble with the law or lose my job or rock the boat or alienate people. That's pragmatism. But the spirit of Christian submission is driven by a theological conviction that this is God's will. It's driven by allegiance to a higher authority, namely God. He tells us in verse 18 the scope of this Christian duty. Not only to the good and gentle masters, but to the literally twisted, that is, the harsh and the hateful and the unreasonable. Skolios is the Greek plural. Not many self-respecting people would find it elevating to be anyone's slave. Especially having once been free, it would be galling and almost an insufferable reduction in human dignity. After a time, one might get accommodated to serving a generous and gentle master, for there were such. But how hard it would be, under any conditions, to accept the yoke of someone who treats us like dirtbags, as happened to many American slaves before the Civil War. Yet the principles of law and order and respect for authority are so important in the divine scheme of things and in God's common grace in protecting society from itself and in restraint of the wild beast under the surface of the human breast. That's so important so that we do not allow the gospel to be justly scandalized in the eyes of the wise by foolish behavior. So the Lord directs domestic slaves to respect domestic order. And as I say, to a lesser extent it applies to employees insofar as their labors have been purchased by an employer. They are obliged to do the same within the limits of the employer's authority, which is a lot less than the limits of a master's authority in ancient times. We are to reverence God's will and God's dispositions of things, and submit even to the authority of severe and twisted masters, all for Christ's sake. In verses 19 and 20, he tells us what shows the presence of God's favor. When we patiently suffer for righteousness, that guarantees his approval. For this, suffering for Christ's sake, bespeaks grace or favor with God. This ability to put up with unrighteous suffering for conscience' sake is a sign of the presence of God's favor in the form of divine enablement, and the presence of His grace is a signal of His approval or eventual blessing, deliverance, and exaltation. Patience in suffering for unrighteousness invites no blessing. There's no godly virtue in acquiescing to the consequences of crime and misconduct. It's good to submit to it without complaint, of course, taking responsibility for misbehavior, malfeasance, or nefarious activities. But so doing, Peter says, is no evidence or token of the grace or favor of God, and no promise of future blessing can be inferred from manly embrace of just consequences of our sin. In short, it may be manly, but it's no badge of godliness to take our well-deserved medicine. Well, we'll come back to this, friends, in our next study. God bless you. And have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.